Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the New Vision Organization at Human Rights Demand. This is Human Rights Demand Channel. Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. So we thank you right now for joining us on the Human Rights Demand Channel for the New Vision Organization, NVO Hour. We have the director of NVO, Ms. Leona Brando, and she will talk to you about her organization and perhaps some of the clients that they service. We thank you for coming. Hello, Ms. Brando. Are you here?
Yes. How are you, Ms. Neal?
I am doing well. So great to see spring peeking through in Georgia. The tree in the yard next to me is blooming. And so we're very delighted to see spring. But, you know, it's hard to walk outside and enjoy the change of weather. It's hard to go outside and smell the fresh air and know that even as I am enjoying those things and you are, that there are hundreds of thousands of people, millions in fact, who are locked up behind bars, and some of them deserve to be behind bars, but they all, to my idea, should be engaged in rehabilitation programs. Nobody should be in solitary confinement. It could be very different if prisons were engaged in rehabilitation, where people were engaged in going to school, if the ones who are mentally ill were taking art lessons and music lessons. It could be a very different scenario than what we have today. But instead, we have individuals who are being extremely punished to the point that their brain is actually being altered. And so many of the ones who are young are learning new ways to commit crimes, and they're learning a hatred for their fellow man who could treat them so cruelly. Many of them already came from backgrounds where they were treated inhumanely. And so we're just thankful for you and your organization, New Vision Organization, that's bringing a new vision to corrections. And let's hear from you about that today.
Thank you, Mary. I was thinking about this before I came on. Also, I just received a call from a politician. There are politicians out there who are aware of the human rights violations in this country, who are aware of the abuses and things going on like that in the prisons. And I just asked her, and she's willing to do it. What I'd like to start doing in future talk shows, I'd like to start inviting these people on to speak with us so that we can actually let them know, and as you say, let them know about some of the prisoners that we work with that are going through all these violations and abuses. We want to get some feedback from them. Any politician that's willing to come on and spend a few minutes, and she was agreeable to it, and there's others that I know would be glad to come on and also speak with us. And unfortunately, I had not thought about this prior to this phone call and the radio talk show this afternoon, but that will be our future goal, is to start bringing people on who are influential and some of them who have gone through similar problems with their loved ones. And I think that if people are interested in calling in, asking any questions that they want to ask these people and letting them know what's going on. I had an opportunity last week to speak with someone actually from the U.S. Department of Justice, and they had referred me to a legal services in Massachusetts that prisoners do not trust, they do not have any respect for. And I have learned something throughout the past years that the Department of Corrections in various states, they make large contributions to a lot of these legal services in the community. And that is why we don't get the cooperation or the full extent of the help that the prisoners need when we call them on cases of abuses, neglects, or, you know, deprivations. and it's because they're getting large funding and they don't want to jeopardize that money. And so these are the things that we need to start bringing to the public. We need to start exposing all the corruption that's going on in areas of as you say, of the mentally ill that are in need of help and others. So that's going to be my future goal, is to start bringing these people in so that they can hear what's going on, and also that they can have a chance to hear what they have to say.
Absolutely, Lorna, and I want to invite people to call today. Individuals who are listening by computer, and you'd like to call in and, excuse me, be able to ask Lorna Brando, the president of New Vision Organization, questions or make comments and suggestions, please call 347-857-3293. Again, to speak on this show, just give us a ring at 347-857-3293. Proceed, Ms. Brenda.
Okay, what I explained to this person is that the United States of America has an epidemic going on, and again, I'll say this, of mentally ill and of addicted, substance chemical addicted individuals. The prisons are full of them, and most of them that are addicted or have gotten addicted were doing so because they were trying to put aside or trying to block out things that have happened in their lifetime, or they just got in with the wrong crowd. But the problem is these issues need to be addressed. And until the government becomes fully aware of the problems within the system resulting in incarceration, mass incarceration, unless the government becomes aware of this and is willing to do something about it, you know, it's going to escalate. Now, as I told this person, I said, we're trying our best to work with the penal system, with the Department of Corrections. We're trying to work with them so that we can have these individuals become more productive, and also so that we can have a smooth transition for when they are released, if they are released, back into the community. We're not getting the cooperation that we should be getting from the Department of Corrections and states across the country. In order for us to do this, we need to have some help. If we can't get it from them, we need it from the U.S. Department of Justice, or we need it from the lawyers in the communities, or we need it from the politicians who have that influence. Now, I was watching on the news the other day, I believe it was yesterday, of a young man that ended up killing some people. And he had a severe mental illness, and his father said he was sorry that the kid was even born and that he knows the kid would have did something with him. Well, the problem is the kid was mentally ill. They said this on the news. The father was aware of it. He said there was nothing he could do about it. So we need to start looking to the courts. We need to start looking for the courts. When these individuals are over a certain age, the parents should be able to have some say with the courts over what they feel is needed for their loved one. If it's to be put in a residential facility, then the courts need to go along with the parents. They need to help the parents, because what happens with these people when they're having mental illnesses and it's not addressed and they're over 21 and the courts are saying, well, you know, they're saying that you can't do anything unless they do something wrong. And I know this from years ago when I lived on Cape Cod. There was a young man who had mental illnesses. He was going around doing these crazy things. The police would pick him up, they'd bring him back to his house, and then they'd leave him. But the problem is, it gets to the point where sometimes when they say they have to do something very wrong in order to do anything about it, sometimes it's too late, and a person is gone. A person is deceased because of that person not getting the help when they should have. These are the kind of issues that really bother me, and I really feel like we need to fight these things. Because if we don't, there's going to be more crime, I mean, even more so than now, which is already escalated to a maximum, and there's going to be more people that are harmed, there's going to be more people in the prisons. And what's not happening in the prisons is that these people are not getting the help they need. What they're getting is more abuse, their minds are being messed up more, and they're being put in solitary confinement for years, not just months or weeks, but years. They're being beaten, they're being deprived, they're being provoked, they're being harassed, ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. You don't have any kind of therapeutic music. What you have is cold steel bars. You have cement walls. You have gods that are eating up the foods that the prisoners should be getting. You have gods that are beating and provoking because they know no one's out there to help these people. And we as advocates are trying to do the best we can without that support. Then again, we don't have one another because we're all divided. And again, I say, people are in prison because of mental illness, substance abuse, or chemical dependency. No one is born bad. So advocates need to come together, and we need to work on the main issues of incarceration, not a person involved with drugs here and a murderer here and a mentally ill here. We need to look at all of them in the sense that something is definitely wrong, and we need to advocate for doing away with life without parole sentencing. We need to do away with the death penalties, and we need to start focusing on the people out in the communities who are wrong, because these people who have these facilities out there are getting the money. They're bringing them in and pushing them out the other door as soon as they can to bring in more. They're not doing what they need to be doing with these individuals, and that is long-term residential treatment facilities. And I'm sorry, but I really get upset with all these things because everybody should know the problem. I mean, we as advocates, we have loved ones that have gone through it, you know, and even when the politicians know, then something's definitely wrong. I will say, I started the letter writing campaign. We do have people that are now doing the writing, and we do have people that are doing the calls, and so far we've seen some progress in just a short time, but we need more people to join in on the letter writing campaign, because it takes more than just a few. It's going to take a nation to try to unresolve the issues that are going on in this country. There's a prisoner. I just got a letter from today, and this is another sad thing. Anything that happened during the days of the hippies, during the days of protest, anti-government, and all this, anything that happened back in the 70s, there's people that are still incarcerated, doing a life without, because they were out in that protest. There was one, a person in the crowd got shot, and this one person got accused. Now, this person he was a Vietnam veteran, came out with a Purple Heart. He did all the things that he was supposed to do for his country, and during the protest, somebody ended up getting shot, and he ended up going to prison for it. And his name is William Austin, known also as Jafar Saidi, and he's in a prison in Somerset, Pennsylvania. This man should have been out by now. He should have been free. And one of the issues that he has is, again, the solitary confinement long-term and putting these people in chains and treating them as though they're really back in slavery time. That's not helping prisoners. That's not helping prisoners at all. We need to look at some of these people as human beings, and I'll say not some of them, but all of them. And we need to look at, as I told this woman from the Department of Justice, we need to look at each and every case individually, because prisoners today are stereotyped. Every prisoner is known as nothing more than an animal. They're treated like an animal, and they have no say in the matter. They're pitted against other prisoners, gangs against gangs, and guards are sitting there making it look like this is entertainment for them. And if it's not entertaining enough, they add to it. So these are issues that I see and that I find that's bothersome to me. I understand that California is starting to do some good, and they're starting to release a lot of these people that they've had chained for a long time. And I feel that's a plus, and I feel like there's going to be more positive changes coming down. There was one email I had gotten from, and it's from the prison resource community, and it mentions the FBI are investigating Corrections Corporation of America. So they're starting to look into some of these issues themselves, and that's a plus for 2014. FBI investigates Corrections Corporation of America, private investigator at Murphy & Associates, and it talks about the FBI has launched an investigation of the Corrections Corporation of America over the company's running of an Idaho prison with a reputation so violent that inmates dubbed it Gladiator School. So this is one of the issues that are going on right now. I have some prisoners here. I'm going to start looking through their cases, but We have quite a few. I just haven't had a chance to go through them all. But let me just see something. But if anyone has any questions at all, what we're going to be doing as well is posting, and I've already got a couple up there. We're going to be posting the names, the facilities of prisoners who are either being abused, severely abused or deprived, or that are being neglected with their medical treatment, psychological treatment or medical. And these are going to be starting to get posted on a weekly to monthly basis so that everyone can see some of the things that are going on in the prisons, and they can actually write on behalf of these people. So if anyone has a loved one that's incarcerated, that's having mental health issues or medical issues that are not being addressed, if they can just let us know. Send us an email, send us a story, and we'll put it on the website. Let's see. Okay, this one here is... okay, this was police custody. Traffic violation. We also have prisoners.
Well, that's encouraging news, Liana, that the FBI is investigating CCA. I know that CCA is one of the largest private prison corporations, and that it has a tremendous number of prisons. It also has overview of a tremendous number of prisoners, and as I said, it has a long reputation for abuse, for violations against individuals who are in that facility. And you are right, it says that the company is found to have severely understaffed. It's so severely understaffed that the Ballard prison is dubbed Gladiator School. You know, when a prison is understaffed, that makes way for a whole lot of violence, one inmate to another, and gang violence. And it also makes the prison want to put more people in solitary, because then there's a need for less guards. The whole issue is that the prisons are privatized. And we know that with corporations, your main focus is the bottom line. You want to pay out as little as possible for meals, for security, for every expense. And you want to bring in as much as possible. So you're bribing lawmakers to make tough on crime laws. You're bribing officials. You're also supporting whatever changes in the community would result in higher crime. So on one end, you're using money to do what will bring in new prisoners. And on the other end, once you get them, you want to feed them their role. You want to have their few guards, so that your bottom line will be less expensive, because what you're running is a business. This entire system, I hear people say it should be revamped. I say to you that there is no way to get businessmen to stop being businessmen. They will forever look for ways to court politicians, offer them prison stock, show them where their bottom line will increase by passing this legislation or that. This will forever be the scenario as long as prisons have been privatized. Some places have started tearing up their prison contracts. Some places have booted out the private prison system from their municipality. And I know why they did it, and I'm glad they did it. As long as we have people in corrections, people who are judges, lawyers, prosecutors, and lawmakers who are private prison owners themselves. As long as that goes on, then we will continue to have an overrun, abusive system. Why do I know that? Because the Bible says no man can serve two masters. He will hate one and love the other, or he will cling to one and avoid the other. You can't love two masters. You can't serve two masters. No man can serve God and mammon. So, these people who are private prison owners and investors have no choice, according to the Bible, but to serve their own wallet. If we want things to change, our first order of business should be to tell judges, lawyers, prosecutors, lawmakers, that if you own private prison stock, you cannot work in those capacities, because this is a serious problem. It costs Americans $75 billion a year to incarcerate 2.3 to 2.5 million people, and we are sick of mass incarceration. You will never stop doing the things you're doing, because you can't help it. The Bible says no man can serve two masters, so it will never change. They go through the little process of investigating, but that's to impress us. That's for headlines. Nothing changes as long as the people who are earning money off this corrupt system are the people who are doing the investigations. Thank you.
I have to say, too, Mary, that there's more than 2.3, there's more than 2.6, there's more than 2.5 million incarcerated right now, and it was that way about 7 years ago, so it might even be more than that, but there's a lot more incarcerated than what meets the eye, and as they say, there's a lot of things going down the pike this year. It seems like at least they're now starting to talk more about the law enforcement and the abuses that are going on. They mentioned even in Massachusetts about the state police covering up for their own while their own were actually doing a lot of deceptive and corrupt things. So I think that it's going to become more open about the way things are going on than it meets the eye. There was we had a case in California. That was during the three strikes law, which I think they either did away with or they're doing away with. But this guy, while he was incarcerated for the three, he was incarcerated because of robbing a department store for the third time. So he got a life, 25 to life. And while he was incarcerated, he saw the Aryan Nation and others. They got together. They actually brutally beat and raped a guy in the prison there. So when they did the investigation, this gentleman and two others talked to the investigators. They gave them the information that they saw, and then when it went to court for the person that actually led the beating, went to court. The lawyer for the defense asked the judge to let them have a copy of the investigation, so the district attorney had to turn that over. When he turned it over, the lawyer not only had all the information about who told what, but he also gave it to his client, who in turn gave it to his peers inside, his fellow prisoners, and they were going after these guys. So they put the ones that cooperated with the investigator, they put them in solitary confinement. And they shipped most of them out, but the one person that was in for the 25 to life, they made him stay in solitary confinement, so-called protection for himself. But he was the one that was penalized. So when they talk about prisoners inside that see something, they want to cooperate, but at the same time, they're fearful of what's going to happen to them if they cooperate. So this is what happens a lot of times, too. That was a case that we had a few years back, several years ago. Then we have this one here that's talking about how they put this case is in, let me see where this is from. This is from California. This case here, they put this man in a cell where he got stabbed by his cellmate in the back and in his hand. He got stomped on by two people. They brought him in, and he was in. He wasn't taken to the hospital for medical treatment for like 7 days later. He said he couldn't walk, he couldn't do anything, and it took 9 days to get medication. So these are the type of things that, that go on too, is the lack of medical treatment when these people get, you know, when they get attacked. But as I said,
well, you know, some CCA prisons have established their own hospitals, and the prisoners are very underserved. And there have been situations where guards have called for an ambulance to take them to the area hospital, and a one young man died because when the ambulance came, the guard sent another guard sent the ambulance away and said that that would be an unnecessary expense. So even the guards are taught to think in terms of expense and save for the private prison corporations instead of getting medical attention when inmates are in grave conditions, even if they die. So that is a very bad situation. And as I said, some of the prisons have hospitals on site so that whatever transpired in the prison is not carried outside of the walls of the prison. The whole
and you notice
thing that, is that there should be no private prisons. None. Go ahead, Liana.
What I was going to say, is, and this really bothers me too, everybody looks at, you know, what goes on in the prison. They listen to the prison employees, the staff, you know, when it comes to things that happen in the prisons. What they don't realize, and I'll tell you, a six-year-old would understand this, is that men employed in the penal system doesn't separate them from being or having criminal-like minds. So we have people that are overseeing people that have offended, and yet those people overseeing are offenders themselves. The majority of them. I mean, you know, you quoted some scriptures before, and I'll say, you know, when Jesus was talking about, let he who has not sinned cast the first stone. This is what happens in the prisons, and people have got to realize that the men that are overseeing these prisoners, they have one thing in favor, and that's the uniform. That's the garment that they wear that protects them from other people judging them or protects them from going in inside. And that is sad, because what you're talking about is the blind leading the blind, if you want to put it that way. And that's what I think is so wrong, because the U.S. Department of Justice, if they're going to do an investigation, and I'll tell you, there's probably good and bad in them too, but if they're going to do an investigation, don't talk to the guards. If they're going to talk to the guards, talk to the prisoners too, because so many prisoners have been put in solitary confinement on bogus misconduct charges. Guards can say anything about a prisoner. And there was a prisoner in 2011, January 6th to be exact, who was attacked by four guards, one sergeant and three of his peers. This prisoner pleaded to have the legal services or anybody view the videotape, which would have proven the assault. Instead, no one did anything about it. And 3 months later, that same sergeant that caused this abuse and this assault alleged that this prisoner threatened him. So this prisoner ended up getting a bogus misconduct charge on him, which he appealed, but nothing came of it. Now, they said the legal services that got involved, the Prison Brutality Project that got involved, would not do anything. They kept saying, we'll wait until after the DOC does their investigation, and then we'll go and we'll request the video, which they never did. Of course, the investigation that took place was in-house. So naturally, they're going to say they didn't come up with any proven, substantiated documents or anything that proved the assault, which means that once they said that, the prisoner legal services that was supposed to do the investigation all of a sudden said, well, they didn't find anything wrong. That was it. This can happen to any prisoner in any state, and this is sad because any guard, any prison employee can allege bogus misconduct charges, and these prisoners are going to get thrown into solitary confinement for months or even years because no one will view the videos. Now, these prisoners have more substantiated documents and proof of what's going on with them, with those guards, with them, than the guards themselves. But nobody will view those videos. So I say when a prisoner alleges that they've been beaten or that they have been somehow harmed, then somebody should go in and even if they don't meet with the prisoner, view the video just to see if that prisoner or those prisoners are being accurate or honest. And they're going to find out that most of these prisoners are telling the truth and that the guards or the officials are the ones that are abusing. And when I think about how many prisoners may have been killed, that may have been beaten, that may have been, when I think about all of them that nobody even knows about because they were in solitary or because maybe they didn't have family members or they didn't have any support out there, we don't know half of these prisoners if they're dead or alive. And that's very sad. Now, going back several years in Pennsylvania, I mean, I had to go out there. I had to put on a rally twice to go out to Pennsylvania because these prisoners were begging for help. Now, three prisoners in a three-month span in the same hole, kept in the same hole, for those 3 months, these prisoners were begging for help. And I contacted, and I don't care if anybody knows it, Senator Leanna Washington, Harold James' office. I contacted all of these politicians, these reps out in Pennsylvania. I contacted ACLU in Pennsylvania. I contacted the Pennsylvania Prison Society. I contacted all these people who did absolutely nothing until the third person, Clifford Finney, died. And these were all supposed to be alleged suicides. Now, he had written home to his mother. He said if anything happened to him, that he swallowed the evidence. This is the kind of thing that went on. They found that when they tried to cremate his body before his own mother got his body. And fortunately, the mother contacted Congresswoman Shirley Kitchen, who put a stop to it. So when the mother got the body back from her son, they found his legs were broken. Joe Kappa, Joe Hoquin, and I'm sure the advocates in Pennsylvania remember this because some of them actually participated in the rallies. But the thing is, those are three lives that could have been saved. One of them needed his medication. He had some kind of psychological problem. He was supposed to be discharged. All three of them were supposed to be released within a year or so. He was begging for his medication. He wrote home to his mother, and he said it wasn't because he wanted the medication. It was because he needed it. And because he never got that medication. So these were not suicides. These were actual deaths that went to this day unresolved. So these people literally got away with murder. And I'm saying it's not just in Pennsylvania. It's in prisons across the country. This is what you call truly human rights violations, human rights issues. Now they say Ecuador is really pounding away at the United States because of their harsh and their human rights violations. It's not only Ecuador, it's other countries. Now here we are, we got a government that's going after other countries for their violations of human rights, and here we are number one, we're at the top. So something's got to be done with all of this. Something has got to be done with it.
I agree with you, Leanna, and I said that, you know, there are investigations. There are people who are coming forward and saying they're interested. There are people who are making press conferences saying we're thinking of these changes and those changes. But I say, before we go from here forward, let's go from here back. Let's clean up the situation, people who are already incarcerated. And people
That's
like
it.
My family, my brother was secretly arrested. He was free like you and me. He was kidnapped by police officers off the street of Memphis, Tennessee.
You know, Mary, I'll say this.
While police lied and said they did not have him. They hid him in jail. They lied and disclaimed his arrest. They disclaimed having him in custody for 18 days until he was murdered. And neither the county of Shelby, nor the state of Tennessee, nor the United States Department of Justice will give us any information or records about that murder, which is a clear case of murder. When you kidnap someone and you keep them 18 days away from their heart drugs that they must take, and whatever else they did to Larry Neal, we don't know, but I invite the guests to read about that on the wrongful death of Larry Neal. So everybody's talking about what's going to be done to make the prison system more accountable. I'll say to you that I believe it's mostly false unless the justice needs to start raining down, not just from here forward, but from here back, because no family should have a member kidnapped by police and murdered. As you say, sometimes the murderers and the worst offenders are the ones who are in charge of justice. Anyone who covers up a murder, if I come to your house and you murder your husband and I help you hide the body, then I am an accessory to murder after the fact. And that's what the United States Department of Justice is in the case of the wrongful death of Larry Neal.
Okay, getting back to your brother.
Murder.
Getting back to brother, Mary, this is why I say it's important for quantity. Okay, getting back to your brother, NAMI, the National Alliance for Mentally Ill, and I'll tell you, I thought that was a good program when it first came out, and I actually went on to join it, and the only thing I see really is that they're looking for donations. The National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, if they were behind you 100%, as well as all of us, as well as all the advocates for prisoner rights, whether it was in jail your brother was in or prison, he was not in prison. He was in a lousy jail, and he shouldn't have been there. But if National Alliance for Mentally Ill and all of us, all of the organizations out there, the groups and individuals who claim to be advocates for prisoners, were to be behind you 100% and going to the U.S. Department of Justice and going to the places where we could get. Look at Sherry Sweeney. She was the founder of the Patrick Crusade. Her husband was a police officer in Alabama. He exposed his peers for all the corruption, the abuses, and the drugs, substances. He exposed them, and he ended up getting set up. He ended up getting a life in prison. He died. Patrick had a heart attack. They claimed he had a heart attack or whatever about, five, six years ago. And Sherry, she started the Patrick Crusade on behalf of her husband, which was pretty much global. And when she wanted to get the records, the medical records, she was not able to get them. She did. I don't know if Sherry to this day ever got those medical records.
I want to say, Leona, that this is a wonderful topic. We may have to cover it next week. And we want to thank everyone for coming and invite you back next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Leona Brando, who is the president of the New Vision Organization. Leona, you have time to say goodbye to everyone and tell them anything you need them to know in like 30 seconds.
Okay. Our website is newvisionorg.com. That's newvisionorginc.com. And we are an advocacy organization for the incarcerated men, women, and youth nationwide. And we have online.